The life expectancy of doctors is 59. The life expectancy of non-doctors and the people of us in this room is 71. 75% of doctors in India get attacked at least once in their professional life.
Wow.
So think about the 60-70 people sitting outside in Kanya. Imagine like they get attacked at least once in their professional life.
But you know what we realized is we started marketing EcoFlex as a sustainable fabric. It didn't work.
Why?
It didn't work because nobody cares. I think we often listen to all these podcasts with like brands who maybe done their 0 to 1 journey, right? And we feel like, oh my God, they've made it and so fancy and like, you know, but that's not reality at all.
Welcome to the Indian Silicon Valley podcast. I'm your host, Jivraj. And today I'm hosting two incredibly special people. Join me in welcoming the founders of Kanya Med, a leading consumer brand for medical professionals. Thank you so much, Abhijit and Manchika, for joining me.
Thank you, Jivraj. I think this was long pending, and thank you for coming by to the Kanya office.
Thank you. I'm super excited because in the brief period that I've known you, I've always enjoyed my chats. And every time I mentioned to somebody that I know Abhijit, they mentioned that you should chat with Manchika because she's the person with the insights, including Abhijit, actually. So I'm super delighted to be uncovering everything that you've built till now and how the journey is just getting started. What fascinates me the most is this is a very distinct brand, right? And it seems from the outside in that it's for a specific sort of niche TG, but it's much more. And I want to uncover much of that. The objective in the next 1 hour is to uncover how you built the brand, what is the organic pull, the supply chain innovation you've done, and also develop a sense of empathy for care providers, right? And not look at it from just needing care, from care, getting care, right? Yeah. So to get started, even before we dive into all of that, I'd love to know from you, Vanshika, that from what I understand that you started the brand from a women's apparel point of view, right? But then the pandemic happened and then it became Kanya, what it is in the current avatar. Talk to us about how that took shape and what happened.
Absolutely. No, so I was in Singapore for my undergraduation. I went to a college called LaSalle College of the Arts. So the brand Kanya was actually born while I was in my last year of college. We had to do a graduation project where you had to launch a brand. And Kanya was the brand that I launched in college for my graduation project. And Kanya was very different then to what it is now. It was a women's workwear brand. I started it in college, continued after college. I was in Delhi that time and ran it for about 3 years, got married, shifted from Delhi to Bombay. And soon after we got married, a month later, COVID hit. That's the time when I was actually setting up my office in Bombay, trying to build a team in Bombay. And then because of COVID, everything just came to a standstill. I couldn't hire anybody. We couldn't find factories to work with. Everything had come to a standstill. So that's when, and I've always been an entrepreneur. I've never done a job before. So for me, not doing something was troubling me. Abhijit was already an investor that time. He was already working. And, you know, we just got together and we just heard that, you know, that medical supplies are low. And that's when Kanya was born. And then we got into the space.
Oh, lovely, lovely. I love that. But it was also like counterintuitive, right? A lot of people saw this problem, but nobody did anything significant about this. There were like smaller projects which ran for about a couple of quarters, but then it shut shop. How did you think of really building a company out of it? Where was the conviction and how did you shape that?
No, absolutely, right? So I think there were a couple of things, Jivraj, right? So I think one was that having grown up in a family of doctors and being non-doctors, we've always had a deep sense of empathy to the work that they do. Right. And when I say doctors here, I mean every medical profession, right? Doctors, nurses, midwives, technicians, security, everyone related to the medical healthcare system. That was number one. Number two is we realized that the medical ecosystem is a very siloized community, unlike many other communities out there, where they kind of spend a lot of time together. A large part of the day, 16-18 hours day, is together. So feedback loops are super quick,
right?
Word of mouth is very quick, right? So if you're building a good product and it's really helping them, that's really celebrating them, it goes around pretty fast,
right?
And number three, I think, is that the pandemic really made us realize that doctors are not treated well in this country. They're just treated very, very, very poorly, right? And I think you touched upon this, right? I think the and a little bit what your question was as well, is that why do we have empathy towards doctors today, right? And I'd like to kind of start the podcast itself by leaving two pieces of statistics that would, I think, blow your mind and maybe your listeners as well, is that one, the life expectancy of doctors is 59. The life expectancy of non-doctors and the people of us in this room is 71. 75% of doctors in India get attacked at least once in their professional life.
Wow.
So think about the 60, 70 people sitting outside in Kanya. Imagine like they get attacked at least once in their professional life, right?
Yeah.
And they need to go to work every day thinking that I could get attacked by a patient. And why does this happen? I think it stems from policies. I think it stems from the lack of doctors in the ecosystem. It stems from the general toxicity that's there in their day-to-day life. Right, so I think keeping all these missions apart, and of course Vanshika's skill set of apparel and textiles, I realize is a potential and a fortune to build a brand to celebrate these individuals, right? And what better product than apparel? That's something that you have a relationship with every day, that you wear day in and day out, and particularly doctors and nurses who are in those same scrubs and aprons for like 16, 18 hours a day, right? And that's when Vanshika came in and did all the magic with regard to the product development.
Awesome. I love that. I think there's a lot of empathy, and I didn't know about these apart from the research I did leading up to the conversation. But kudos to the mission, kudos to the opportunity and building something for them. Before we go deeper into Kanya itself, I'd love to also touch very briefly upon your specific backgrounds, right? Because very distinct in nature, and yet they complement each other in very, very interesting manners. You are a fourth generation entrepreneur from what I hear. You come from a background of textiles. You've seen that in your family. Talk to us about what was it like maybe growing up in this environment? How did that shape your mindset? And what are the skills that you perhaps picked up that help you today at Kanya?
I think a lot of things, right? Growing up in a textile family, I remember every summer being at one of the factories to sort of learn about, you know, different technicalities of fabrics, of yarn manufacturing. Yeah. I've spent, 2 months at factories a year. Just hearing talks all around in the house, in the office. So growing up with it just helps a lot. The way we think of innovation at Kanya is basically our mindset is that if, for example, athletes can have brands like Nike, Adidas, Puma, Under Armour, who are focusing on them, right? They are only concerned with what an athlete can wear, which will make the athlete perform a little bit better,
yeah.
Right? Is anybody in India doing that for medical professionals? Nobody is, right? I don't think anybody's ever given a thought of what they wear.
Yeah.
I think after we started Kanya as well, and you know, if like anybody would ask us, what do you do? I think it's taken people a long time to even understand what we do.
Sure.
And I remember when they asked us what we do and we said scrubs, they wouldn't really understand what that means.
Yeah.
Right? Because no one's given a thought. Nobody's even noticed what a doctor is wearing.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's cool.
Yeah.
You know, they deserve the attention and they deserve to look professional when they show up to work every day. And that's what our focus is on. And that's where the fabric innovation comes.
Lovely, play. Lovely. That's mm-hmm. truly commendable. I think it just shows with everything that you've done till now as well as a brand. And it just like the innovation is very evident. And I love the analogy, like leading up to the episode also, like Nike is for sports, Kanya is for medical professionals, and hopefully that's going to I think this is getting started, of course, but still making dents. Coming to you, Abhijit, I think you have a very different yet interesting background in your own way. You studied in the US for most part, undergrad and postgrad. You've been an investor in private equity before. You've also worked at Reliance. Talk to us about the varied experiences you've had and how you decided to take the plunge.
Absolutely. I think the dots always connecting, right, with all of us in life, right? I think sometimes when you feel like, how did that experience really help? You really don't know. Subconsciously, it's always helping, right? It's the time that I spent at Stanford, the time that I was in engineering in the US, the time I was in consulting, or the time I was at Reliance, or my previous experience of investing. Right? I always feel like it's all of it is an amalgamation of the experience that I'm able to kind of bring to day-to-day life at Kanya today, right? And I think my most recent experience of investing made me realize the art of like studying younger companies, understanding the importance of cash flows, working capital, the understanding of really adding day-to-day life, right? On how we can kind of impact some people who can probably exponentially impact the day-to-day life of other individuals, like people like you and me, right? I was lucky to meet some of the largest consumer brands today when they were a lot younger, and that provided me empathy to the concept of business building, right? My time at Reliance, also spent time with some senior folks at Reliance, and I think nobody does execution better than Reliance, right? To really understand how they've executed some of the largest projects in the world and had such an incredible impact. So to learn that vision and to learn the importance of hunger and persistence, I think some of those kind of value systems stick around with me even today as we scale Kanya. It's been a phenomenal ride for us to grow Kanya from where we were 2 years away. And I think we're very proud of where we've reached. I think you were in our office a year and a half back. We're doing a lot smaller, right? And I think we're a very long way to go, but it kind of makes us feel good about the impact of the value that we've been able to have in this business and help people to really, you know, help inspire other people.
Sure. And that's lovely. I think very, very interesting backgrounds, and it's amazing how it's come together. And yeah, you rightly mentioned, I think I first got to know about Kanya when it was at like 20-30k YouTube subscribers. It's at some 420k, and that's just like organic social media traction. But I visited the other office as well. Today was a new office, so all of that's been really, really nice to observe outside in. Why don't we go a bit on the market side first, right? So as a bunch of folks listening, they try to evaluate markets before they are going to any sort of entrepreneurship venture, right? You have to rationalize a lot. Talk to us about, because again, outside in feels like medical professionals, you quote the number 80 lakhs, 8 million, a bunch, right? Looks like a smaller sort of market, right? You could rationalize a lot against it, while you could, of course, see the opportunity that you guys did and built it on top of. If you had to, like, day zero, build a business plan for us and evaluate market for Kanya, what would that look like?
Yeah, no, absolutely, right? So I think you're spot on, right? I think 80 lakh people, 80 lakh in some sense is our total addressable market today, obviously growing 15-20% year over year, may not be as big as a number perspective than maybe a men's underwear brand or a women's kind of fashion brand, right? But that's not how we looked at the business from day one, right? Being a former investor myself and in management consulting, I think I can tell you that Excel is more fiction than another tool out there. Right, and I think whatever number that the tool tells you is really not accurate. It's dynamic, it's changing. I think it's about how brands play the market, and I think how brands play their consumer and build that relationship, and how deep they can go in that consumer relationship. Right? Yes, there are 80 lakh medical professionals in this country who are, I think, can be very loyal, who can be easier to reach. Being in a niche audience kind of helps us kind of with our go-to-market strategy in communication, in terms of kind of building products and building feedback loops. So that's the real benefit in some sense of having a smaller market.
Sure.
Eventually, I think today Kanya is a brand that provides scrubs, aprons, and some basic accessories that doctors wear. But I think once you build that brand, I think sky is the opportunity on what we can kind of support these medical professionals with. You're absolutely right. We've used content as a very powerful tool through YouTube, through Instagram. We've tried to create content which is very inclusive to just medical professionals. The brief that I think Vanshika and I kind of had with our content team was that if non-doctors understand our content, you're doing something wrong. Right, it should be content that only doctors and nurses can understand and laugh at. And I learned this from my time in New York when I was at Wall Street. I followed a bunch of finance pages and finance meme pages, which only people who were deep into finance understood. So that was simply the logic. And I think that's something we have doctors at work at Kanya, while the interns or consultants, they write a lot of our copy, they write a lot of kind of our ad scripts, is because we are not doctors, we do not earn that degree. The only way for us to really speak the language of medical professionals is for it to be by medical professionals, right? So I think it's very early in our days, but I don't think market size is something that really has ever come in the way. Some of the biggest businesses, Airbnb, Uber, For that matter, even a lot of the business that Reliance has entered has kind of started off thinking it's a bit niche, but eventually they grow and then just the pie gets larger and larger and larger. And we have aspirations of that as well, that sure. we can keep catering to medical professionals and supplying them with products that could add more value to their day-to-day and sure. with the trust that we hopefully build.
Absolutely, I think that makes sense. If I might quickly double click, yeah. if you had to just break down market for us in the standpoint that okay, this is offline versus online spend, this is how much is driven by B2B versus like yeah. B2C. Yeah. What's that funnel
sure,
like?
Sure. So I tell you, I think we are a digital first brand.
Sure.
Right. So being a digital first brand means that the way I define digital first is where you kind of acquire your customer online.
Okay.
Right. So they probably caught us through our website, they caught us through maybe a Google search, could be organic as well, sure. could be referred on Instagram by a friend, maybe non-ad or ad across the board, right? So I think keeping that in mind, we're a digital first brand. So technically everything is really digital first in some sense. Sure. Everything is online revenue. But that being said is we have offline stores as well, where a lot of doctors and nurses come by to the store itself to kind of feel our products, touch the products. We have seen doctors, nurses, students, maybe purchase departments of hospitals, they come by as well. It's more like an experience store, but it is conversion friendly, right? So we have a lot of purchase that happens there as well. We have a second model where we kind of reach out directly to larger hospitals, right? And we partner with larger hospitals to buy our products,
yeah.
right? And this is a lot of hand-holding here, where we can kind of make the purchase department, make the hospital feel comfortable of our quality, of our service level standards, etc. Right? And I would say third is purely online. It's e-commerce, where people buy on a website or people buy from online marketplaces where they can buy Kanya. And I would divide it between these three. I would say the third and second bucket are the more important one for us today. The first one, which is stores, I think it's growing and it's a concept that we're testing out. So far, it's been incredibly successful, but it's very new. It's only been 2 months. And I think based on the initial results, we look to double click on that and kind of focus on the growth net even more going forward.
Got it. Super helpful. I think that really helps understand the business in more depth. Coming to you, Vanshika, I'd love to understand, when I was researching, I could not really rationalize the meaning of functional products for medical professionals. I could not rationalize the EcoFlex versus classic range. As somebody who's from the inside, if you can just in a very easy manner break down for us, what does functional really mean for medical professionals? Mm. How did you identify these pain points? And then what is the range right now like? And what is the, backward integration you have to do to make this happen?
Yeah. So functional for us is basically a clothing which lets you do what you need to do throughout the day without coming in your way.
Okay.
Right. So for example, if you're at work, these doctors go up to like 36-hour shifts, which is crazy to think about. And what all do they need? Right? So the product innovation happens thinking, I'm the doctor. I'm working on a 36-hour shift. This is the life I lead. This is how much work I've done to get where I am today. What do I want to wear to be able to be comfortable throughout my 36-hour shift?
Sure.
I need pockets. Right? I use a stethoscope every day. I need pens. I need diaries. I need my, maybe medicines, maybe like my collar, my phone, my iPad. I need pockets to keep all my things.
Sure.
I need the fabric to be anti-sweat, Hospital, the infrastructures in India, we're all aware of it. You sweat, you're running around, you're on your toes 24/7. I need this fabric to be super breathable. I don't want to sweat and look dirty at the end of my shift. Third, the fit, right? Which is something which nobody's focused on. It's something as very simple, but yet no one's got it right, right? I need apparel which is ready to wear. So it's not personalized by a local tailor, but it should fit me the way it should wear. Like, how you are in like a tee and a jeans just now and it fits you perfectly. You've not gone to a local tailor and bought it.
Sure.
You've bought it off the rack, but it fits you.
Yeah.
And that's something we focus on a lot. So we always have focus groups. We talk to a lot of people. We try out the product a lot before launching it. We also keep, taking feedback from our customers on fit and keep tweaking it every 3 months, actually.
Sure.
So it's a continuous process. The fabric, actually is our own recipe. So it's actually patented. It's a proprietary fabric that we've created ground up with a lot of research. It took us about almost a year to get to which fabric we want to use. We have our classic range. We have our EcoFlex range. We're actually launching a new fabric soon as well, which is in between the classic and the EcoFlex. The classic is an incredible fabric with all of these properties that I just mentioned. Anti-sweat, breathable. It's made of polyviscous fabric. So it's very long lasting. You can wash it up to like 100 washes and it's perfectly, absolutely fine. Our second range, which is the EcoFlex range, is actually sustainable fabric. But more than that, it focuses on the four-way stretch. Because what we realize is that a lot of work that they do involves a lot of movement. So stretchability is something that they need. Yeah. When they sit, when they stand, they're on their toes, they're moving. So we invented a fabric with four-way stretch. It's also anti-sweat, antimicrobial, anti-wrinkle. So it doesn't wrinkle throughout the day. So basically everything that we do in terms of product innovation is really just keeping in mind who we're making the product for, consulting a lot of them, getting to know their daily lives and being like, okay, if they have this problem, how can we solve it? Right? So for example, one of our recent focus groups, we realized that, you know, a lot of the hospitals have a badge that you have to wear, you know, with the name and the hospital information on it and all. And they usually end up putting it inside their pocket or something. They don't have a place to hang it. So we've recently just you know, added a small functionality in our garment so that they can just hang it straight there. You know, so it's just these small, small things, but they make all the difference.
Lovely. I think the nuances are very, very interesting. And I had no idea, for instance. So for me, also very, very fascinating to hear. I'll just quickly double click, right? Like a lot of what you mentioned in the past is also, you know, have a sustainable line of supply. You also have like proprietary raw material. All of this is very new in the consumer world, at least in the new age brands, because a bunch of brands also, for no, I mean, good reason, go ahead and contract manufacture. And then the supply side innovation is very little as opposed to what you're doing. Can you double click on things that we don't get to see? So as a medical professional, when I'm buying Kanya, I will only see the final product. What happens on the background to make that product and get it to life? If you can just walk us through that, that'll be super fascinating.
Yeah, so behind the scenes, of course, first is the research, right? Just a lot of understanding on what we need to do. So a lot of research, then a lot of testing, prototyping. Prototyping is something we do all year round. Right, like before we launch a product, there are 50 that we've rejected. Right, like we recently launched our long sleeve scrubs, and this was, I think, the 78th product that we tried out.
Wow.
So a lot of prototyping happens. We roll it out in small ways just to see what the feedback loop is, and then we finally launch one which is, you know, worked really well for us. So that happens. Third is reiteration, right? One product that I've launched in the market is usually never the final product. It, again, requires a little bit of reiteration, which keeps on going in the next batches. So I think these three, I would say, are the main buckets of what goes behind the scenes. Along with that are quality and things like that. I'm ticking off because I'm just like, that is the basic thing that we can give to our customers. Sure. So of course, a lot of focus on the quality. We have a team of QCs at every factory. They all go to our finishing house where every piece is checked. The QC's name is written on every product to sort of backtrack it in case there's any problem. So of course, all of those measures are there. But that's something where I don't even want to sort of be proud of, because I feel like that's the bare minimum we can give them.
Sure.
So I'll just add here, actually, that's pretty interesting, right? So as Vanshika said, right, there's a lot of prototyping that goes into that made up, for example, our latest launch is the long sleeve scrubs for winter motifs, right? You will probably not see this enough in other kind of fashion brands, right? And there are many that have come up, right? And many being successful in India as well. The reason, the game is very different.
True.
Right, I think they need to reach market quickly with their most kind of innovative design that maybe the new age Gen Z can kind of wear. we are in the business of keeping medical professionals safe.
Right.
Right. So I think we cannot afford to have it, even a slight amount of kind of error in kind of the quality we provide to doctors and nurses. Because these guys are wearing this in OTs. Right. They are wearing this while doing surgeries. They are doing this while like taking care of the most complex situations in emergency rooms. Right? So that is why getting the right product out there becomes super important. And I think getting the quality standards right, the SOPs, becomes incredibly critical in our line of business. Right? Sure. Because yes, we are in some sense cool scrubs and fashionable scrubs in some sense, but safety is first. Right. Functionality is second.
Yeah.
Then comes the other things of like fashion and good color and like all of that.
Yeah.
Right. Right. So I think that's what makes it very important. And I think another question, which I'm sure a lot of young entrepreneurs who probably listen to your podcast will be curious to learn, is about margin structure.
Yeah.
Right. I think quality assurance is super important, the most important, but it has to be baked into the gross margin.
Right.
Right. And the very famous saying, right? Companies kind of die with the gross margin they start with.
Yeah.
Right? That's just the reality. Yeah. Whoever thinks that, oh, you know what, I can move it up from here, I'm telling you that doesn't exist. Right? We've been very luckily profitable from day one, but at the same time, we've kind of baked in the price from day one as well, that quality will not be compromised.
Yeah.
Right? And I think that's one thing Vanshika and her team are being very, very strict about in creating those SOPs to make sure that every product is checked and double checked and double checked before it is shipped out.
Brilliant, brilliant. Yeah, no, I love it. This is very, very intricate detail, especially from a supply side. You hear often, you know, like we'll also talk about the brand, organic, yeah, social, but I think this part of the brand story sometimes get missed. Yeah, I'm so glad we're discussing this. I quickly, like, I think the ending loop on the supply side is the sustainable side of things, right? You both have been very vocal about the fact that as a apparel brand, as a fashion brand, is very easy to also hurt the environment.
Yeah.
But that's something you don't want to do. And there are protocols being taken and processes to that tune. Yeah. What are they? How do you go about it? What's the logic?
So, Vanshika, if you were to talk about it, the EcoFlex fabric, which you came up with.
So, EcoFlex, of course, took us a lot of research to get to this fabric, being like, okay, fine, we're going to go ahead with this one. To us, sustainability was very, very important. And hence, our EcoFlex fabric is made of recycled PET bottles, which are found in the ocean waste. It is certified. So that was also very important for us, because a lot of the fabrics out there say organic and cotton and all of that. Nothing is true, mostly. So it's also a certified fabric to make sure that we have everything to the T. But you know what we realized is we started marketing EcoFlex as a sustainable fabric. It didn't work.
Why?
It didn't work because nobody cares.
Mm.
We are doing it because we care, right? But nobody cares. You tell me, I mean, how often will you buy a product just because it's telling you it's sustainable? At the end of it, you're going to buy it if you like it and if you need it. You're not going to buy it because it's not hurting the environment.
Yeah.
The day we started marketing it as four-way stretch, boom. Right. So I think sustainability is really important, and we as a brand believe in it, and as a company believe in it, and hence we do it. We do it with a lot of our packaging as well. But does that help from in terms of like sales? No.
Got it. Yeah.
But so I think it's an interesting story to add again, that I think there is a set of the consumer that cares.
Okay.
Right. I think there are brands that are big. We did not see our communication CTRs go up. Right? So ad copy, we quickly realized that, okay, it's not, but maybe you can't be talking about four-way stretch, you can't be talking about EcoFlex, about the eco aspect of it as well. So we realized that this fabric, by the way, yet exists, and it's an incredible seller for us and very important product for us. But it's just that we realized, okay, we don't need to talk about it, right? But as a brand, if it's part of the founder's ecosystem, the broader company believes in this cause, we stick to it. We just don't need to go on top of the hill and kind of scream about it. We continue doing what we're doing because the product is solid, it's mission oriented, and it's kind of provides some kind of support to the ecosystem.
Absolutely. No, I think it also goes to show that founders need to make conscious choices for the long term. I mean, who knows, in 5 years, this is the norm for every brand, and you've already executed it 5 years before, right? So I think you never know, and you have to make those choices. So commendable.
This EcoFlex fabric that we've built, I mean, I can literally scream on top, like stand on top of the mountain and scream that it is the best product out there.
Lovely.
You cannot get anything better.
I love that confidence, and that's how it should be. I mean, if every founder could believe in the product that the way you do, I think every company succeeds. And that's a great show of, like, you know, structure for most founders out there. If you're building something, you might as well build it with the right first principles, right conscious choices. And bake the margins as well. Don't do it at the cost of it. But interesting, as we go further, right, I want to get to the buy side and considerations on that front, how the brand helps, how social helps. But even before that, if you've touched in passing, both of you, as to what the consumer in this case wants, but if you could just summarize for us, right, like, is price a consideration? Is quality the most important consideration? Is safety the most important consideration? Because in different industries, in fashion, in health and like beverage, in multiple different industries, the consumer choice is very varied in nature, right? There's non-loyalty in fashion, in skincare a lot, right? How have you seen your customer evolve over the years, and what is their consideration when they're looking at any brand? And then why do they choose Kanya?
Yeah, I would say trust. I would say trust. I think trust is very important in this in our consideration framework, I think building trust takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of consistently showing up, right? You will ask your roommate, you will ask your senior doctor, you will ask your nurse what they are wearing and how happy they are with, and how was the service, how was the pre-sales, how was the post-sales. How was the exchange experience? And that word will just go on. You cannot hide with that conversation. And do not even pretend to. You are as transparent as a brand as you should be. Right? So I think that's one thing that we focused very clearly.
Sure.
We've not been perfect. I think that, like every brand, we've also kind of faced our fair of issues in kind of while we were scaling up to order delays. Sure, proactively communicate to the customer that you're running late. Right, the exchange didn't get picked up because of some delivery issue, right? Sure, be proactive, right? Communicate, and the other person on the other side is also a human being. If you communicate and be honest with it, you will win the trust.
Absolutely.
Right, and as founders, we get like thousands of tickets a day, but I yet spend an hour and a half every day doing customer service. I yet every Thursday for 3 hours go and spend my afternoon at a local hospital or a local college in Bombay, interact with customers and interact with non-customers as well, who may have churned or may have be aware of Kanya but may not have bought. Because I do fundamentally believe that being complacent as founders, that okay, we've earned the trust and that's it, is the worst thing that can happen. Yeah. Right? So I think that's one thing is in the DNA of the organization, of that we are looking to just garner trust.
Lovely.
Right? And that can mean very simple hacks, right? Like, for example, we over communicate to the customer all the way from the order being picked up, order being confirmed, to the order being picked up, to it being dispatched or being the nearest hub, to it being delivered, to confirming. Because we feel, and we found this in research, that the customer prefers over communication or under communication.
Wow.
Right? And I think we are living in an e-commerce 3.0 where we are lucky to have so many kind of software solutions that can help us provide this enhanced experience to customers, especially when your customer is incredibly busy and can't look at their phone for 8 to 10 hours a day, which is what our customer is.
Yeah.
You got to kind of even create even more trust.
Yeah.
Right?
Lovely. I think just reinforcing so much of what you do via building trust is so important. And I love that. Just over communicating, even in this podcast, that trust is so important to you as a company. Is the foundation of any other brand as well, especially in this field.
Yeah.
Coming to the organic, growth side, you built a content engine that just serves the medical community the best. It's one of the largest in the country, perhaps, when it comes to dedicated medical channels across media, right? Not just like one channel. What are ingredients that go into building this? Because this is any consumer founder's dream, right? Because they all want to like not go the performance marketing route or not entirely depend on it, and they want the organic channel to also work out well. How do you get there? What are ingredients that have gone into it?
So I'll start off with this and then give it to Abhijit to sort of add his views. Two things that I think we've really focused on from day one is A, consistency, right? I remember when we were just starting our YouTube channel, and YouTube takes a while to pick up, right? We started posting. We did long video, we did shorts, we did a little bit of community, and we wouldn't see the results, right? And those are the times where you feel like, this is not for us, this platform's not for us, no one's seeing it, why are we even making content, why are we posting it here? But if you just keep at it, it works, mm-hmm. right? There will be a day where suddenly you'll see the growth, and then after that, there's no stopping.
Yeah.
So I think consistency is one thing that we've been doing with across all our platforms. Second is making it very relatable. You know, like really knowing who our target audience is, who is watching it, and what they want to watch.
Sure.
Right? So these two are the main aspects that we've always focused on, which is, I think, gotten us so far. We have an incredibly young content creation team, to be honest. They're all freshers from colleges, from NIF, from Pearl, from a lot of other colleges. Fresh ideas. I feel like Abhijit and I have become old and we don't, you know, because obviously like trends change, right? Yeah. There's so many new trends that now we are not aware of, and your team, your young team is going to, you know, be on their toes and tell you what to do because they know better now.
Absolutely. Anything you'd like to add?
No, so I think I agree with Vanshika 100%, right? But where I'd like to kind of, you know, really kind of double click is that to succeed on social media platforms, it's as much being consistent, it's as much kind of putting that obviously a very shareable kind of well edited kind of content that kind of people will engage with, but I think it's equally important to play the algorithm.
Right,
it's equally important to play the algorithm. Very simply, once a year, Mark Zuckerberg speaks, you've got to listen to him. When Neil Mohan speaks, you've got to listen to him. Right? And they're very clear. They're very honest with what they're focusing on for the next 12 months. Right? Are they focusing on video? Are they focusing on shorts? Are they focusing on vertical? Whatever they're doing, I think they're very honest with. And I think that's when you realize that you need to put your resources towards that aspect of the algorithm. Right? Because innately, as brands, you need to kind of put a lot of your resources towards what the algorithm will automatically have tailwinds towards.
Sure.
Right? I'm not saying don't stick to the same video, graphic, stories. I think YouTube, same story. It's going to be always be there. But sometimes you got to also put your eyes and ears towards kind of how these massive supply engines are going to help you create distribution.
Sure.
Right? And I think that's when there's a real kind of platform content fit,
sure.
Right? And as Vanshika said, right, I think the important thing to a lot of brands is be consistent, be at it, keep trying new things,
yeah.
Right? Because if you're fearing of trying things, yeah, there will be few videos that will not kind of hit your 50, 100K, whatever, million views, but you will learn something from it, and then maybe you'll try something else, and if you keep trying, it will work, and then it compounds, right? And I think that's the beauty of YouTube. And it's been a phenomenal journey, and it's something that we're very grateful for. And I think long way to go, I think, to reach more and more voices. But I think it's been a very important channel for us to create trust.
Yeah.
And a very important channel for us to create trust where people are able to interact with us. We've been able to create a form of a community where people are kind of engaging with our videos, engaging with our content assets, and looking forward to those content assets. We're going, Tanya will release this on this day. Boom. Right? I think I will relate to it. I will have a laugh at it. Why not?
Yeah. And that's phenomenal. I think very, very important. What I'm taking back is consistency, playing the algorithm, and just being trendy. You need to keep at it. And that shows, I mean, I was coordinating with somebody from the content team before leading up to this episode, and she was already like preparing for today's calendar, etc. It was just like completely right? And it just shows in the team. So that's been really nice to know. As we bring the loop to, you know, company building to a close, and then I have a couple of final questions. I think this saying in the ecosystem right now that it's never been easier to start a brand, but it's never been more difficult to scale one, is starting to just really bother a lot of young founders, right? Because what does this mean? What does stagnation of a brand really mean? What does scale really mean? Because, I mean, in terms of the software stack, in terms of sourcing, everything is now pretty automated in nature, right? So you could, you know, set up a Shopify website, you could get a supplier, and that's your product, right? You could launch a e-commerce website. You've now built the brand for about 2 years. It seems to have what we define in the tech world as PMF, and you're now scaling. You have multiple channels now. You have a retail store, etc. Talk to us about what this scaling journey is. How is it different from the 0 to 1 aspect? What are new challenges that you're facing as a company?
Yeah. So I think it's a superb question, right? I think a year and a half back, if you asked me the problems I was facing, I'd be like, oh my God, right? But the simple thing is the problems don't end, right? And I think as founders and as type A founders, you're always hungry. You're always hungry to solve more problems, to reach newer heights. Hmm. And I think we are guilty of that as well.
Sure.
Right? And so I think number one I'd like to say is that at every stage the problem is different, right? And sometimes it's about some founders are looking to kind of reach PMF. Some founders are looking to reach profitability. Some founders are looking to blitz scale. Some founders are looking to kind of, you know, maybe just rapidly exit, right? So I think for us, we've always been very aligned with what we're looking to achieve. I think the goal that we have set for ourselves is that we want Kanya to become the generic word for scrubs in India, right? What Colgate is to toothpaste, what Xerox is to photocopy. That is our goal. Financial targets, and yes, they're very important. Of course, we have investors as well. We need to kind of, you're fiduciary responsible to take care of our investors. But the overarching North Star metric is what I just told you, become the generic word for scrubs in India. Kanya should become the generic word for scrubs in India, right? Today, I think a large part of Vanshika's and my time is going to kind of, I would say, channel expansion, right? Is to kind of looking at offline. We've launched recently an app. So maybe the app, we're looking to kind of maybe smoothen the edges of maybe couple of online channels as well. So I would say that'd be one. I would say second would be to relook at our product range, right? See products that we can kill, products that we can add, right? That's number two. Number three, which I think is a very critical level, is retention, right? It's to kind of, and I think this is probably an important part of every aspect of your journey, but gets even more important when you kind of cross the lakhs of customers, right? It's you to really dig deep into cohorts and really understand who is shopping with you when and why. And if they're not shopping with you, why they're not shopping. And I think there are many ways. There's a simple technique called the RFM framework, right? Which people can Google and read about, which you should probably be using when you're looking at retention, right? Okay. So I would say these are the 3-4 things that we are looking at as kind of founders. And what I will say is that the hunger to solve this problem, to celebrate doctors and to solve this toxicity has never been more for us as founders. And I think you should only go into this founder journey if you realize that this is a marathon. This is not a sprint for a year, 2, 3. It's a decade old problem or more that you're looking to solve, because the problem will keep coming at you. But eventually, if your mission is clear on what the problem you need to solve and how you need to solve it, look at the long term. Look at the long term. And yes, it's easier said than done, but I'm doing it, so maybe I can say that you've got to keep reminding ourselves that, you know, look at this as a 10-year framework, and it will not look as hard.
Got it. Yeah. That's awesome. I think that's very, very elaborate and very nuanced in nature. It's going to be very helpful to a bunch of folks listening. Actually, I have another point, and that's around building in Bombay and building the team, right? Yeah. What it looks like, you know, like there are these natural hubs that we talk about, of course. Bangalore is one, Delhi is one. Looks like Bombay is this, you know, corporate-like space where everything's expensive. Talent hooks can be difficult to gather because you don't have as much startup talent, for the lack of a better word, available, right? What's that journey been like to establish a brand from scratch in Bombay, and what do you look for levers within the team?
You know, honestly, before I get to that, I want to just add on to the challenges part, right?
Sure.
In case we have any young folks who are planning to start up, right? I think we often listen to all these podcasts with like brands who maybe done their 0 to 1 journey, right? And we feel like, oh my God, they've made it and so fancy and like, you know, but that's not reality at all, right? At all. Like, I remember there were days, I mean, if you take my phone in my contact list, you type trucks, you'll find at least 100 truck drivers' ka numbers, right? Because that's how Kanya was born. I used to, Abhijit and I used to stay up at night and call up our fabric people who've dispatched our fabrics with these trucks and call up the truck driver, "Kahan pahuncha, kahan pahuncha, kahan pahuncha," right? We've done that, and it's okay to do that, right? The person who's heading our ops today, I remember the day he walked into our office. I was sitting on the ground of our small office, cutting packing slips with a blade, right? To be able to dispatch orders. We used to pack all the orders ourselves, and we didn't even have those, you know, those label printers that, of course, we have now, but we used to cut it with like a blade. And it's okay to do that also. There are times we've run jhadu pocha in our office. And it's okay. You have to get things up and running, and that is reality. If you don't do it, who will? This is your company. This is your baby. I have two kids of my own now, twins. And the way, no matter where you are, they're in your mind 24/7. I'm thinking about them in this moment just now. And that's what Kanya is to us as well. It's our first baby. No matter where we'll be, we can be in like Maldives. I wish we were. But we are thinking of Kanya, right? And it's okay to do everything for it, small and big.
And that's so glad. I'm so glad you mentioned it, because the point of the podcast is not to glamorize entrepreneurship, but to humanize it. And with each conversation, the hope is to just dive deeper into company building and explore the learnings and the journey, and not glamorize the journey, but actually share the truths. I'm so glad you were so candid to
No,
share.
I couldn't agree with Vanshika more, right? I think we've had an incredibly tough journey, right? And maybe some have had it tougher, maybe some have had it easier. It's not a competition. And besides, you know, some of the stuff that Vanshika shared, right? I think building a brand takes a lot of time, right? I think building a brand takes a lot of time. There are obviously, I think, Mama, poster child of the T2C ecosystem, and really kudos to the founders, right, for building it in like, I think, 7 to 9 years, whatever they've kind of taken it public, right? Phenomenal. But I think a large percentage of brands take a lot of time. Look at Sula Wines, right? It's taken almost 2 decades to become like really synonymous with what wine is in this country, right? Building a brand takes time. It is not a tech product. It is not a software product that can happen in 3 to 4 years. Right, to build that trust takes time, right? And I think, do not become a founder of a brand if you're not willing to kind of put those long yards of creating trust, because over time that trust will compound, right? And I think that is when you will realize that those yards like were worth it, right? And so that would be my advice, that I think patience is a very important skill set. Sometimes, you know, in this whole monthly MIS and looking at numbers and the month and the quarter, you can sometimes get like, oh my God. And this whole, I was talking to a young founder just 2 days back, and he was like, you know, I check my Shopify app every hour to check what the sales are, right? And I honestly don't feel, because I used to do that 2 years back as well. And I mean, we do look at our numbers multiple times a day as well, but it's, you got to realize that it is not a story of a day.
Yeah.
You know, it is not a story of a day. Right? It's something that Manchika reminds me So to answer your question about hiring, right, and the ecosystem. So I think you're absolutely right. Bombay is not Bangalore. It's not Gurgaon. But I think it's come up to be a very important market for consumer brands. I think there's a good community of consumer brand founders out here, right? We actually catch up pretty often this year as well, across apparel, personal care, fashion, right? And we've not had the issue with kind of hiring.
Okay.
In fact, 30-40% of our team has moved also out of Bombay,
oh, wow.
right? From tier 2, tier 3 cities, right? And to kind of were keen to kind of join a young growing company. So I think that's one. Second is, I think it also comes with, I know I'm saying this again, but I think it's trust as well.
Yeah.
I think they want to see kind of what the founders are building, what the team is there. Today, people will go on LinkedIn and kind of see who's working in this company.
Yeah.
What are they doing? What are their roles? What are their backgrounds?
Yeah.
Right? And I think it's very critical to be very transparent in today's day and age on how you're building the company. Right? Mm-hmm. Obviously, a lot of founders and this whole concept of building in public. I've never understood the building in public. I think it's important to kind of share. But I also think it's important to put your head down and execute.
Yeah.
Right? And I do write on LinkedIn, and you know this as well, is because I feel it's important for people to kind of see how we as founders think.
Yeah.
More importantly, what are our value systems? How do we build this company?
Sure.
Right? There's no one right way, and it's important for team members to see, okay, I align with this person's value system. I do not align with this person's value system.
Yeah.
Right?
And this has really worked for us, I think,
worked for us. I think there are a lot of people who kind of who reach out to us, being like, you know, we love what you're building and we just want to be part of it in some way. Even if you're not hiring, we'd love to fit in some way, right? Mm-hmm. And I think organic hiring, inbound hiring in some sense is the most powerful. It's high intent driven.
Yeah.
It kind of, this creates a lot of kind of goodwill in the ecosystem as well. In finding talent, I do. Yes, of course, it's difficult. I think getting the right talent is important, but we are always about kind of empowering. Right,
sure.
A lot of the leaders in our company today joined as very young executives 2 years back who've kind of stepped up, upskilled themselves, and got taken a bigger role.
Yeah.
Right? Okay. And I think hiring is the toughest, I think, point to kind of crack, right? Hiring and retention of, I think, team members to create a conducive environment for them to grow and foster, I think is very important. It's something that we as founders will always be involved in some of the senior most founders are yet involved in that, so that's not going away and something we actually really enjoy.
Yeah.
I think we are what the team is.
Yeah.
Right? And I think there's no, I think, going back in that. And one thing which is interesting is this whole Gen Z versus millennials. We are like millennials, but there's Gen Z founders.
Yeah.
And I think it's important to realize what matters to them.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
we realize that flexibility matters to them. We believe that they like space, they like making their own decisions. They don't like clockwork, right? They're enter 9 and leave at 5. They may want to walk in at 11, they may want to walk out at 4, right? As long as the work gets done, they do it. And I think they're significantly more hardworking than maybe some yester generations.
Yeah, that's lovely. Very, very commendable. And I love the tactical pieces you mentioned at the end. I think there's something all founders, you know, talk about and how difficult hiring is. And so future founders always want to know. So very interesting. One last quick loop here is the fact that the brand is so mission driven and there's a lot of empathy that is required to build it. How do you percolate that within the system, right? How does it transfer to all folks? Because you know, I was talking to somebody and they were like, you talk to them very often. What are tactical things that you can do with the team so that they understand what is the role of the job beyond the immediate like checklist? How does that happen?
So I think it's a superb question, right? So I think I feel in the early days, right, our values as founders is what the value and the culture of the organization becomes.
Yeah.
Right? If we believe being very frugal is important, that's what the... We believe meetings should start on time, they start on time.
Yeah.
If we believe feedback is important, feedback is important.
Sure.
Right? But as you scale, right, I would say beyond 30, 40, 50, 60 people, beyond that, it's very difficult for you to kind of keep a check on the culture of all these aspects of the grassroots.
Yeah.
And I think this is why surrounding yourself with the leadership team becomes very important, where the leadership team can kind of imbibe the culture that probably founders imbibe, right? It's that whole famous example, right? You add sugar in milk, it becomes sweeter, right? And that's what I think, that's why hiring becomes even more important. Right, is that the interview process, you may not have the exact same person who will kind of also believe punctuality is important, but he or she may believe that another aspect is important.
Yeah.
Right? And maybe we can do a lot more about inclusivity. There's a lot more than maybe we can do about kind of, I don't know, like fitness, right? Yeah. Which maybe we are not doing today. Right? And that is when you kind of keep churning out ideas and a new formed culture comes up. Yeah. Right? We try doing the simple things like keeping our door open, being super accessible, everybody having our number, everybody open for a quick chat, walk around the office, do like just do a quick hello, being like how things are going. Even the fresher and intern knows that they have access to like the founder or a senior team member to chat about kind of their vertical becomes very interesting.
Yeah.
One thing we've encouraged, which has really been super exciting, is interdisciplinary learning. So somebody who's working in customer service is curious about graphic design, and she can do it. And we often have this that after spending 6 to 8 months, if you're not enjoying your role, but you're curious about another role, you can re-interview for that role and join. Now, we are no Google, we had a very small company of 60, 70 people, but we've had 3-4 people who've completely moved departments, right? And that's been pretty exciting, where people see that, okay, this is not just about the organization, it's about my growth as well. And I think it's important for team members to realize that they are part of something bigger than just their day-to-day kind of, you know, activities.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
Also, I think what's really helped is we've not, I mean, at least, I don't think so, we've behaved like founders to them. They're like, oh, they're the owners of the business, you know. So there's so many times Abhijit and I have said something, we've been corrected, like all the time, in fact. And sometimes way more than we even like, because that's the sort of culture that we've created, that, you know, if you don't agree with us, tell us right there. It can be a meeting of 10 people, and yet you can speak up. You can tell me if what I'm saying is wrong. And I think that has really helped us, because so many times they were right and we were wrong.
Yeah.
The term I think we often use is called radical candor.
Yeah.
Mm.
Right? Be direct and be honest with what your current emotion is.
Yeah.
That's lovely.
Yeah.
I think very, very helpful. These are amazing learnings, and I'm sure this is going to be very helpful. Coming to the end of the conversation, I think we've covered a bunch of things on company building. Towards the end, I usually ask a series of similar questions to most founders. This is more tuned to their personalities and to get their personal sort of personality on the show. If it was, by the way, not evident, you are also a couple in real life. So that's also something, by the way, for your viewers who may not know. But would love to know, like, my first question is usually, if your team had to describe you, what would they say about you? What would be your hunch? So I'd love to hear from you both what that is.
Do we answer for each other or for ourselves?
I'm going to do that, but I'll let you take initiative there.
So, like, personality traits?
Yes, yes.
Right.
How would they define you as a person?
So, the team would say that I am impatient, hardworking, and compassionate.
Got it.
I think they would say I am patient, very particular.
Okay.
And hardworking,
Got it. Awesome. These are good ones. Within those, I think we covered like traits per se, but like I often like to ask, what is your one superpower? Because it really highlights what you want to be known for and what's your personal North Star. What would that be for the two of you?
So I think it'd be persistence away.
Okay.
A trait? Do you have anything?
Attention to detail. One superpower would be attention.
Oh, nice. It could be beyond traits also. Like, I like to call myself, like, I care. Like, I care deeply about something. And, like, that's my sort of superpower.
Yeah.
But, awesome. This is interesting. The other thing, and, I mean, this is to just understand the flip side. But I often ask, like, what are you fearful about? Do you have something on that?
So, I think nothing about work. I think it would be about family health.
Sure.
I think that's what it probably would be, family and health of loved ones.
But
right, I think in this volatile world that we live in, sometimes you know, and I would say just, I think that's what I would be. I would say, like, health of, like, loved one, maybe colleagues, maybe friends, maybe family. I think that's what would be.
Yeah. For me, I think a lot of things, but I think something on top of my mind as a new mom is I leave my kids and show up at work every day.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm fearful, or I'm guilty at all times, that am I doing the right thing? Mm-hmm. Fearful that one day my kids should not feel that I've not given them enough time.
Yeah.
And fearful that I should not regret that I didn't give my company enough time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's very kind of you to mention, Manshika, because, you know, I sometimes also ask founders, what are the trade-offs they have to make when building companies, and bunch and as somebody who's building, like, you know, as somebody who's also, you both are married, you've just had twins together, and you're building a company, that there's so many life waves that you have to go alongside together. Do you feel like, what are the trade-offs to the founder life, according to your book?
Manchika has just been incredible, right? In the last 1.5 years have been super tough for Manchika, for me as well, right? And I think to kind of manage and balance kids, manage running a growing brand is super challenging. It's very tough. And kudos to her and a lot of women out there who are able to juggle it and kind of show up and yet kind of bring impact to the workplace and at home. And it's, they just have it a lot harder. So I think kudos to Manchika for doing that. And I think this is why my vote goes to husband-wife businesses, right? I think this is where there's deep understanding, there's a deep sense of kind of camaraderie to balance responsibilities. We've seen this across many husband-wife businesses successfully as well. And this is why I think husband-wife businesses work, right? It's important to kind of understand the woman's role during this critical time. And I also feel that women are more productive. Manchika spends less time in office than me, but achieves as much as, right? So that just showcases that sometimes you don't need to be here long enough, but you can manage multiple things at the same time.
Yeah. Sure. And that's lovely to hear. Thanks for sharing, both of you. I think I have two last questions. One is the Stanford question, actually, which I often ask to other guests on the show as well. And the moment I actually first came across it about a couple of years back, I started thinking of it as a good life question.
Yeah.
So you're, of course, familiar, having written that essay.
Yeah.
But I'd love to know from you as well, like, what is that, you know, what really matters to you in life and why? And I'd love to understand what that is.
Yeah.
I think what really matters in life to me is sleeping well at night.
Okay.
Right? Knowing that consciously you have not done anything wrong, professionally or personally. And by doing wrong, I don't mean extreme cases. I even mean that at work, I've not hurt anybody intentionally, right? That at home, I've not spoken rudely to anybody or misunderstood anybody, right? So what matters is for me to have that clean conscience that today was a tough day, but good day, and I'm happy with how the day went. I'm at peace with myself.
Sure. Awesome. Mm-hmm. And what about you?
So I actually wrote about trust. I wrote about the importance of trust in life and about gaining and earning trust of people around you. I wrote about that. I think it's yet very important to me. But if I had to kind of add or make a 2.0 version 7 years later than when I last wrote the essay, I like to say community. I think community really matters to me. The people around you, your close family, your kin, your kids, your friends, your colleagues, and I think creating a fostering community can be very powerful in many ways. I think that's what matters most.
Lovely, lovely. These were both very, very, very good answers. I was trying to, before each episode, I try to think of the end, right? Because that's the positive note you want to end on. I think for me, the best takeaway from this company conversation and the two of you will be the mission. So what I'd love if we can end on is maybe one of your favorite stories from, you know, customer journeys, what somebody must have said, and how that aligns with the mission of what you're trying to achieve. I think that'd be a very, very fitting end to the conversation. So
yes,
I think you have a lot of these.
So actually, it's beautiful, right? Being a founder, and I think sometimes you just get customer love in your inbox, right? Where people just write to me like, "Thank you for just existing. Thank you for just doing what you do."
Yeah.
We are lucky to get that honestly on a daily basis, and I think it's something that keeps us going. Right? That's one thing that really keeps us going in the lows. Just last week, I had a final year MBBS student who visited us in the office. And he was sharing about kind of how some of the content that we've kind of put out there has kind of provided an incredibly positive impact to kind of reduce the toxicity with regard to ragging in this college, right? There's a lot of ragging in, like, I think junior, senior relationships in medical college. And I think that really moved me, right? Mm-hmm. I think we realized that, yes, we are an apparel brand, but the mission was to celebrate doctors. The mission was to make a positive impact to these medical professionals so they can focus on doing good.
Mm.
Right. And when we realized that our mission was going and the impact was a little bit more than just people feeling comfortable and people feeling a little bit good about themselves while wearing it, to realize that there's some kind of positive impact that was happening through the messaging that we were putting out there, that made us feel good. That made us feel good. And and then it was back to work again.
Yeah, sure. No. That's lovely. No, I think that's great. I think a very, very fitting end to what's been a great conversation. Thank you so much, Manshika and Abhijit, for your time.
Yeah, of course.
It's been lovely, and thank you so much for being so kind with your learnings. I think this will be super helpful. It was a great conversation.
Nice. Thank you so much for coming. This is long pending.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Manshika.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.